Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, presenting sponsor of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Bill Curry Ford, they are a Tampa tradition, 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium. GM Sean Sullivan is ready to help you personally. That's no joke. Personally. Call him, email him, walk into the dealership. Get it all started at BillCurryFord.com. Sean will help you any way he can, whatever it is he wants to do it. Nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Everybody, including Ira Kaufman, on this podcast is a customer. BillCurryFord.com. And remember, Florida's best craft beer, Big Storm Beer, is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. And put it in your phone. If you have any disaster in your home, your first call before your insurance company is to Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida'sElitereStoration.com, your disaster company in the Tampa Bay area. Licensed mold remediation specialists as well. Yeah. Bucks fans, the post-Super Bowl party rolls on the Ira Kaufman podcast. What a week, Sage, of Tampa Bay sports. What a week it has been. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. The D. Kemper of Joe Bucks Fan is here, and the podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. They are fired up with all the Bucks fans as well. GM Sean Sullivan is ready to help you immediately, 24-7. Get to BillCurryFord.com. Ira, we've got a lot of fun today, a lot of fun things to talk about. And we've got our, as folks saw in the headline here, we've got Vita Vea checking in. Got a chance to talk to him for a while before the Bucks parade. Very exciting, with an assist to Bill Curry Ford for helping make that happen. They love the Bucks in all ways. Ira, Jason Light says we're going to F and win this thing again next year.
You know, I love the passion. I love the passion from Arians and Light. And of course, those are the guys that are going to be making the football decisions. And there's some tough ones to make. But, you know, as I was watching the clips of the Bulk parade, I couldn't help but think, gentlemen, home values in the Bay Area just went up 8%. Just think about it. It was an infomercial for this area. You know, that second week of February, you're watching this thing from Vermont or Massachusetts or Ohio, and you're seeing the Buccaneers shirtless on a boat, and the sun is shining, and the sun's gleaming off the water. I mean, Lee, what an endorsement for the whole Bay Area. Besides what's going on with the football team, it really put a great face on Tampa Bay. And let's face it, those of us lucky enough to live down here, we know all the positives. It was a tremendous. I think it's going to be a tremendous boon for vacationing down here, and I think even more. And I think there's 1,000 people moving into the state of Florida a day, and Lee, there might now be 2,000. A day moving on.
Been thinking the same thing yesterday, Ira. For example, I know there's a polar vortex up north. And there was a guy that always comments on JoeBucksFan.com. He's from Iowa. There's a couple guys from Iowa, but there's one guy in particular. It's 13 degrees here, and then like you said, you know, you're seeing the. I refer to the sun gleaming off the Vince Lombardi trophy, but yeah. There's a picture of Evans on the boat, shirtless, holding the trophy up, and the sun's bouncing off that trophy. That sums up the entire day. A guy on a boat, topless, holding up the Lombardi trophy with the sun bouncing off it. But you're right. All these guys partying, and not just, you know, guys in their 20s. Arians and Light, the picture Arians, the Bucks have. And I'm surprised the Bucks even published this. Light's chugging a beer. Right next to him, Arians holding up a beer. And they're on a boat in the middle of the week, shorts, T-shirts. And what more could you say? It was, you know, if the Bucks ever win another Super Bowl, the hell with a regular parade. They need another boat parade. That was classic.
I'll tell you why the Buccaneers published it, Lee. It's called Sponsorship Dollars from Bud Light.
That's Bud Light, yeah.
Or Miller Light or whatever the hell they were drinking. I think it was,
it was Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, yeah.
Yeah.
Sage, you know what? That's the perfect time to remind everybody that just because football season is over, Big Storm Brewery, their great tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, and Cape Coral are open 7 days a week. You don't have to watch football there to enjoy their incredible menu and Florida's best craft beer, the Wavemaker Amber Ale, Tropic Pressure Golden Ale, the Bromosa, my personal favorite, and all the great food. Follow them on Facebook, Big Storm Clearwater, Big Storm Odessa, Big Storm Cape Coral, all separate pages, and they're opening shortly in Orlando at the Amway Center, and it's going to be accessible from the outside. We'll talk more about that when they actually open. But Big Storm Brewery, big fans of theirs. They're also right in Bill Curry Ford. So if you want a great sandwich, a Reuben, a Cuban, head over to Bill Curry Ford. You can get lunch right there while you shop. BigStormBrewery.com. Punch in your zip code and you'll find out where you can get Big Storm beer near you. Sage? Gosh, I know you were out there shirtless. We've got some photos. We haven't published them yet. But most fans tune in here for football. So we'll talk a little football because there's some fun stuff going on and plenty of aftermath and comments. One thing that Clyde Christensen said, Ira, which I wanted to get your opinion as more of a sage, longtime observer. He was on the Pat McAfee show, and he was saying, hey, look, one big thing that separates Brady is essentially all season long, he's saying, get another piece in here, get another piece in here. And a lot of quarterbacks who are established, they don't want a new piece. They don't want to shake up the tree. They don't want to do anything like that. They want to just keep working what they got. They don't want that X factor in the mix. But Brady was, hey, you know, let's get Antonio Brown, Leonard Fournette. I can get something out of this guy, that guy. That he didn't name specific names, Christensen, but he did talk about how Fournette and Brown are eating at his house, living at his house, and that Brady just wants more and more and more. And what do you make of that?
You know, the first thing I think about, Steve, in that regard is I think it might be a reflection of Brady's last couple of years in Foxborough. There was a paucity of resources on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, everybody knows about it. They didn't have a top-notch running back. Lee, his receivers, to use the word pedestrian, I think would be a reach. I mean, it was absurd what Belichick was throwing out there around Brady, you know, especially Lee in 2019 when Gronkowski wasn't on the field. I mean, that made it even worse. At least you always had Gronkowski. And so 2019, he didn't. And we know how the season ended up, and Brady didn't play particularly well down the stretch of that year. And Lee, I think he gets the temp. He's like a kid in a candy store. He obviously respected the talent. I think that's one of the reasons he signed with the Bucks, a major reason. But he wanted more, 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 Lee. And I think part of it is that he had garbage around him in Foxborough, to put it politely. In retrospect, you know, that might have been a 4-12 football team in Foxborough without Brady, if they had an average quarterback. So I think he gets to Tampa and he wants more and more and more. And like Steve suggests, he's a guy who can handle it. He's not worried about keeping everybody happy. He knows how to do it. I think part of it is because he had nobody in Foxborough.
Is part of it just his drive, just his natural drive? Like, hey, you got X amount on the salary cap. What are you doing? Let's go get somebody. It reminds me of Chucky. And Chucky, even to this day, Chucky's like, I got to have more. I got to have more. I got to have more. You know, yeah. Now he's talking. You know, there's rumors out there that he might be sniffing around Russell Wilson. Chucky had an insatiable appetite for quarterbacks. I always talk about Chucky. This is my saying about Chucky. He never met a quarterback he didn't like until the guy played for him. And I just think I think Brady's sort of like that. You know, what are you doing? You've got $3 million under the cap. What are we wasting it for? Let's go get another player. This is ridiculous. You know, we can win a Super Bowl with this guy. I don't disagree with what you're saying, Ira. I just think it goes to more Brady's personality, like, you know, his drive, his ambition, you know, that if you don't use every nickel of your available resources, you're being irresponsible to the program.
And, Steve, look, you know, when the season ends, look what happened. Gronkowski catches 2 touchdowns. And you say, do you really need Gronkowski? You got O.J. Howard, who was healthy at that time, when the beginning of the season, and you had Breit. Do you really need Gronkowski? Yeah, I need Gronkowski. Well, do you need Fournette? You got Ronald Jones. We didn't know LeSean McCoy was going to turn out to be a non-factor. You drafted Vaughn. Do you really need Fournette? Yeah, we need him. And he played great in the postseason, so it's very hard to pick apart the guys that Brady wanted to bring in. They all played roles down the stretch.
Oh, yeah. Now we have weeks ahead of deciding who else he's going to want. Is it James White? You know, is he going to want one of his old backfield mates? It'll be fun to watch. But that brings me to a different subject along the same lines, Ira. You know, Bruce Arians has done a couple interviews of the many that he's done, and has said multiple times that the Bucs were just one player away. And, you know, in some ways that's quite a shot at Jameis Winston. It's also quite an embrace of the power and the meaning of Tom Brady in the locker room. But, Ira, isn't it kind of a weird statement when 8 touchdowns in the postseason and a 9-for-9 field goal kicker in the postseason were all not here last year? All that production was delivered by guys who weren't with the Bucs. So why is Arians going out there saying we were just one player away when everybody knows they weren't just one player away and the whole team has been celebrated as having built this dream team of big names?
You know, I think, Lee, and I don't take any pleasure in saying this, but I think it reinforces my opinion that when last season ended, 2019 season ended, with those two horrible losses at home to Houston and Atlanta, when you could have went 9-7 with a 6-game winning streak, I think Arians just had it. He had it with Winston. He had it. And had Winston played okay and they won both of those games, maybe even split the games, I still believe Jameis Winston would have been under center in 2020. And instead, it didn't happen. And when the season ended, rightfully or wrongfully, however you want to look at it, Arians blamed Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston. Plus, he keeps saying we had talent. We had talent. He certainly thought they should have been a 9-7 team, if not better, in 2019. He kept thinking about the turnovers. It's all he thought about. The only thing he thought about was the giveaways. What happened? What happened? We can't win with those giveaways. Who's he going to blame? He's not going to blame Ali Marpet. He's going to blame Jameis Winston. And he got the right guy, ultimately, Lee. He got the right guy in Brady. Who knows what would have happened with Philip Rivers. I don't think they would have won 7-9, Lee, with Philip Rivers. But I'm not sure they would have went 11-5 with Philip Rivers. But I think it's a direct reflection, Lee, on what he thought of Jameis Winston, lack of a better term, screwing up the 2019 Bucs. I think that's what he thought when the season ended.
Yeah, Ivory, I think you're overlooking one major factor here. And like I said, I don't want to rehash the Jameis thing, because anybody that thinks that this wasn't a smart move, they need to go back to the bar. Goodness gracious, they just had a boat parade for a Super Bowl. Jameis apparently was asking for his agent was asking for the sun and the moon. Don't discount that as being a major factor. Like, wait a minute, we're going to pay $25 million or whatever the figure was to, you know, someone that throws the ball away a lot. Yeah, he threw 5,000 yards, and that's beautiful. But wow, this is a lot of money. And then they're looking at Brady, and there's a lot of chatter that goes on between agents and general managers. Much. Ira, you know this. Much more than anybody really realizes. It's not like, you know, free agency, all of a sudden the bell rings and you're allowed to call a general manager, or general manager's allowed to call an agent. No, that happens all the time. I'm just, you know, our photographer got a picture of like talking to Drew Rosenhaus before the Super Bowl. So I don't think they were talking about La Teresita's chicken. Brady's here. Brady got him a Super Bowl. And thank God this all happened. Whoever had the epiphany, God bless him.
Ira, at the celebration, you know, big talk, a lot of fun, but I'm not sure what reality is. But Jason Light and Bruce Arians made it very clear, and they were saying it in front of all the players, that they've got the resources and what they need to bring everybody back. And Arians is having fun saying, you ain't going anywhere, you're not leaving, you ain't going nowhere. I'm not sure if the reality is that they can keep everybody. And of course, everybody has to want to play for what they're willing to spend on these guys. Do you think there's a real core of truth to that the Bucs believe they can literally keep everyone? I'm not talking about losing one or two, that they can keep everyone from this Super Bowl team and bring them back.
No, I think that's a fantasy, but I'm glad they say it. I'm glad they say it. But that's not the NFL reality. And you know, he likes to talk about the salary cap. I don't think it's going to go down significantly, but it usually goes up and sometimes significantly. And so that might not happen. And that's going to hurt the Bucks, you know, along with other teams. New Orleans is in bad shape in that regard. I think a lot worse than the Bucks. So to keep everybody, Lee, I think that's pie in the sky. And Lee, think about it. If you're a player, I mean, even a Levante David, and Buck fans hate to think about it. But what if Levante David can cash in, Lee? What if he could and make significantly more money with another team than he can with the 2021 Bucks? I know the allegiance. I know he wants to play next to Devin White. But, Lee, it's a business. And how many times have we said on this podcast, Lee, in terms of free agency, it usually comes down to the money. There's agents involved. They're pushing the players in a certain direction. And loyalty only goes so far most of the time. So we're realists on this podcast. To think everybody's coming back, I don't think so. They're going to have to prioritize, you know, who's number one on the list. Is it Godwin? Is it Shaq Barrett? Is it Levante David? I don't think it's Ndamukong Suh as well as he's played. So we shall see, Mr. DeKemper. Jason Pierre-Paul will be back, Lee. But to keep everybody, I don't see it, Lee. Some guys are going to go for the cash, and that's just the way it is.
You know, it was all nice talk. The players were saying, "I'm going to come back. I'm coming back." You know, Shaq saying that. Levante David saying, "I made camp my home." You know, all said laced with Crown Royal and Bud Light. And by the way, I know Ryan Jensen's giving away bottles of Crown Royal to his teammates because he had a deal with Crown Royal. Couldn't you have him spring for Crown Royal Reserve? You guys make decent money. It's not that much more expensive. It's not like $200 a bottle. Come on. I've been saying this for months, that one of the following two is going to get franchised. The other, the remaining individual will get a contract. Chris Godwin, Shaq Barrett. Now, that doesn't mean that the guy that gets a contract with a different team. It would really stink to lose Godwin and Shaq. Either one. It would be horrible. You know, all this pie in the sky talk, that's before they sobered up and talked to their agents. So it would not shock me if Levante took if Miami broke the bank for him, if he went down there. He's already got a ring with the Bucks. I mean, it would stink, but it would not shock me. But here's the good thing. CNBC came out with a report that the NFL hopes to finalize all their TV deals before the 2021 season, which means if it happens, that may prevent the salary cap from going down because the NFL is going to, you know, they're going to break the bank with these new TV deals. So there may be a way to keep these guys. That's number one. Number two, if the salary cap does go down, which is expected, it's going to be a buyer's market for players. It's absolutely going to be a buyer's market. So let's say that happens and the Bucks lose Levante David. Just an example. Everybody and their brother now wants to play for the Bucks and Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, number one. Number two, if it's a buyer's market, these guys want to play for winners because there's a ring. So let's say the Bucks lose Levante David. I assume they're going to get a hell of a linebacker at a value rate to replace him because, again, they want a ring. They want to play for Arians. They want to play for Brady. So even though this is devastating to think about, the result will likely be not devastating. So either way, I think the Bucks are going to make out okay. Specifically to your point about keeping the entire team together, you think Stinney's not going to get a job offer to start somewhere?
I know what you mean. Steve, I think Godwin's an interesting case, Steve. I've said on this podcast, I think he's a glue guy, a Hines Ward. You know, he's off to a hell of a start in his career. Brady talks about his hands, the best he's ever thrown to. And this guy's thrown, you know, to Wes Welker, Edelman, Moss. I mean, he's thrown to some guys. And, Steve, he didn't finish the season well. I mean, let's be honest. He didn't do much. He made a one long catch, which was a beauty. I believe it was in the Packers game, and it was a big catch. But, Steve, you know, look at it. I mean, suppose Brady is, you know, adamant, you know, about Antonio Brown. They've got Scotty Miller. Of course, they got Evans in his prime. And they got Tyler Johnson. So, Steve, if Godwin's asking for the world, you know, I think it's now a debatable topic, and I love Godwin, but Steve, he didn't do much down the stretch. Now, maybe he was hurt, whatever, but I don't think he necessarily helped his bargaining position in the postseason.
Well, he wasn't his best down the stretch, but he was still extremely good, and he's a young player, and you know, the guy blocks, and Arians loves that, and he has Godwin in to block all the time. Now, I know you don't overpay for a blocking receiver. This isn't Mark Dominic with Michael Clayton. We did that already, but he's a true Pro Bowl caliber receiver, and he's probably a top 10 receiver in the game, and I don't know how you just let that guy walk out the door. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. I don't care if he likes Antonio Brown and Brady's pushing for Brown. I mean, I'm not interested in trading Godwin for Brown. So I don't know. It is an interesting situation, Ira. I'll give you that. And you would think the Bucs could do a long-term deal with Godwin and just, you know, sort of backload it. And that would give them a lot of help and a lot of relief. But who knows what he's really interested in. And like Lee said, which is a factor, I mean, he got a ring already. Maybe he wants a new adventure as the number one guy, as the go-to guy on a football team. I don't know. You know, he's not from Florida. He's from the Northeast, family up there, went to Penn State and all that. So it's possible that he's interested in a number one deal. And that would be a problem for the Bucks if he's really looking for a $20 million long-term deal. But who knows where their priorities really lie. And I think the Lavonte David question is very interesting because the linebackers at his level, for the most part, earn $3.5-4 million more than David did this year. So if he just wants to be paid market value, keep in mind Quan Alexander left this team, his good buddy, and was earning basically $13 million a year, and Levante's making, you know, like 10-5. If he just wants Quan Alexander money, well, that's another raise for the Bucks. And like Lee said, maybe Miami wants to pay him and he's, you know, spends a lot of time there and wants a new adventure after 9 years with the Bucks. You know, I believe that these guys all want to stay right now, but hey, you know, well, I can make an extra $7 million over the next 3 years somewhere else. That all of a sudden becomes helping a lot of extended family and charity and just flat out cash. So Jason Light, even though they were talking big, they've got you know, some challenges ahead, not just building for next year, but, you know, beyond. Apparently Brady, you know, wants to play forever. So maybe they do have to think beyond just next year. It's no longer a 1 year situation, in my opinion, Ira.
A couple of quick points. Lee, you know, who could be the X factor in the Godwin situation is Tyler Johnson. And the reason I say that, Lee, is these guys saw Tyler Johnson the whole season. During practices, and I think he kind of showed just enough to kind of whet your appetite. He made some big catches. Now look, is he Chris Godwin? We don't know that. We don't know that. That's a stretch. He hasn't been given the opportunity. Don't know what Brady, you know, is telling Arians and Jason Light about Tyler Johnson and his views and. Of course, that will carry a tremendous amount of weight. As far as Lavonte David, Lee, I worry a little bit about, you know, the potential for losing him and the effect maybe on Devin White. I think in the minds of the Buck coaches, Devin White's ready to take over as the face of this defense. I don't think there's any question about that. And I remember when the Bucks drafted him, Lee, so do you. They talked a lot about his leadership, a lot about it. He hadn't played a game for the Bucks. And I think that was part of the whole scouting process. This guy's going to be the leader of this defense. Yeah, and it looks like it's happened. But, you know, I can't help but think, you know, the professionalism, Lee, of Lavonte David rubs off on Devin White every day, not just on game day. And the kid's young. He's impressionable, passionate, as all get out. So, you know, you lose a Lavonte David, you lose – there's a ripple effect a little bit in the locker room in terms of a Devin White. So there's a lot of things to think about, Lee, but Devin White is the face of this defense. I don't think there's any question about it.
I think Devin White will be perfectly fine with or without Lavonte David. You know? I don't see Devin White's play dropping because Lavonte David takes a, a check for his hometown Dolphins, hypothetically.
Ira, you talk about professionalism. You talk about Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration, that is your disaster company in the Tampa Bay area. If something goes wrong at your home, if you got a flood, if the roof caves in, if you find mold, a big old slab of mold when you're cleaning out under your kitchen sink, as an example, you got to call them immediately. Before you call that insurance company, you're going to get a free assessment. They'll be out there before you know it. They'll be calling you back immediately. If they don't pick up, even if it's 3 a.m, you'll get a call by 5, and they'll give you a free assessment, and they will help you with your insurance company if you want to move forward, if you need to move forward. And in that time of crisis, you need people you can trust. Honesty is everything in that moment, and that's Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Put it in your bookmarks. The Sage has it in his bookmarks there. If he needs it, he's got it. He's calling right away. Thankfully, no problem at Shea Kaufman. Everything good over there, Ira?
Everything's good over there. And
Ira, a little fun nugget. And since Lee mentioned John Gruden earlier, Jay Gruden was on with Rich Eisen, and he was talking about the Super Bowl and breaking it down. Thought Todd Bowles had a masterful plan and all this stuff. Anyway, they asked him about who he was rooting for, and he basically says, look, you know, they fired my brother. They fired me, and I love Tampa. I love Tampa. My parents are still there, and we love going there. I was rooting for the Devil Rays. I love the Lightning, but no, we weren't cheering for the Bucks at all. And he said, we were... he said, I'm not going to lie to you. We're rooting against the Bucks. So what do you think of that? You think John Gruden really is still bitter, even after getting into the Ring of Honor?
You know, it's been 12 or 13 years since Gruden got his walking papers from the Glazers. And those wounds have not healed. And maybe that's a reason why Gruden is a Raider instead of a Buccaneer. We'll never know. But family ties run deep, guys. And, you know, I can tell you that John Gruden's father, Jim, he's still got a bone to pick with the Buck organization, because in the early days of the franchise, Jim Gruden was on the coaching staff, and it didn't end well there either. So, you know, that was Culver House. And but, you know, it's still the franchise, and there's still some bitterness there. There's no question about it. I don't think necessarily on the part of the Glazers, because we're talking about the coach that got him a Super Bowl. But as far as the Gruden family, they don't forget very easily. They still can't believe that John Gruden was fired after 2-9-7 seasons back to back. I don't think that's ever going to be healed, Ring of Honor or not.
What would Al Davis say if he knew he had a coach that was rooting for the Chiefs?
You know, speaking of that, Lee, and we should at least mention this, Steve, Marty Schottenheimer passed the other day. Heck of a coach. I don't think he's going in the Hall of Fame because he did not make a Super Bowl. And I think in the minds of a lot of selectors, that's a disqualifier. You know, one thing about Marty Schottenheimer, Lee, and you know this, when he got to Kansas City with Carl Peterson and turned around a terrible franchise, You know what job number one was, Steve? You got to beat the Raiders. You can go 7-9, but if you sweep the Raiders, you're going to keep your job. That's what that rivalry was, and I think still is to a lesser extent. Schottenheimer hated the Raiders, and once he got to Kansas City, they kicked the Raiders' ass for a decade and really turned things around. So, Steve, you know, sometimes you get that division rival, and I think that's brewing now between the Bucks and the Saints. I think the arrow's going up on the Bucks, and I think, you know, with Drew Brees' impending retirement, which I think we'd be shocked if it didn't happen at this point. Steve, I'd be shocked if the Bucks are not the favorites to win the NFC South and then that four-year stranglehold by New Orleans.
Real quick, wasn't Marty Schottenheimer linked to a Bucks job? I can't remember if it was to replace Chucky or to replace Shiano. Or Raheem?
You might be right, because he had a good season. I think it might have been with the Chargers at the very end. And then he was gone. He was absolutely gone. The guy won 200 games, Steve. I mean, I don't think anybody in NFL history, 100 years, has suffered more brutal postseason losses than Marty Schottenheimer. Good man, good coach. a little bit short on going into Canton, but let's salute the guy. He had a heck of a career.
Here's his angle to the Bucks. Besides being linked to a job opening, when he was at Kansas City, among his staff, and you talk about a coaching staff, among his staff was Herm Edwards, Bill Cowher, Tony Dungy, and Bruce Arians.
Wow.
Yeah, Lee, what you're talking about is initially was the link to the Bucks head coaching job when they hired Schiano.
That's what I was thinking.
Mark Domenech worked for the Chiefs before he came to the Bucks, and he was there when Schottenheimer was there. And Domenech loves to tell stories about Schottenheimer and his overall influence on the organization and his longtime respect for Schottenheimer. So that's kind of what you were referencing there. And, of course, he had that coaching tree that extends all the way to Arians, and we're real grateful for that.
Let me throw out this little nugget before Lee jumps back in. My wife and I got vaccinated. We were vaccinated. Yay! One of us had to go to Brooksville. One of us had to go to St. Leo College. But you know what? It was worth the trip. Didn't even know I was getting a shot. It was painless. Got a little bit of a sore arm, gentlemen, but it's not going to affect this podcast.
All right, Lee, I know you wanted to throw something in here. Next up, Sage, I will be serving up Vita Vea. Like I said, I got to chat with him
for a while
before the boat parade. He wasn't screaming and yelling big girl and playing the drums during our podcast interview. Vita clearly was having a great time dousing Bruce Arians with water multiple times. I did catch a side video of Arians pouring a beer on Vita's head like he got him back. So that was kind of fun. But it's
did
a more
a picture of Vita flashing people.
Yeah, he was flashing people. Yeah, Vita was really making a spectacle of himself. Good for him. But a little more subdued, of course, at 10 in the morning. And he's more of a quiet personality anyway when he's not partying. But a lot of good stuff in there. We'll talk about it on the other side. Leah, what were you going to say about the receivers?
Well, about Tyler Johnston, I think I was on to something. By the way, Ira, I need to listen to you more often. Outside of your football mysticism, I need to listen to you much more often about football. I think you're on about something with Tyler Johnston, because I've been thinking that for a month or two, that, you don't hear anything about any contract negotiations with Godwin. You know, every once in a while you'll hear something about Shaq. Maybe that's because of Rosenhaus. Rosenhaus knows how to use the media like no other. But you never heard anything about Godwin. You heard about Shaq. You hear whispers about Levante David. You never heard anything about Godwin, which spooked me. And I thought about the Tyler Johnson. Maybe they drafted him to replace Godwin. And he did have that spectacular catch. It was against Packers, or Saints. Saints, I think. That just ridiculous catch. But he's also had quite a few drops. And I'm thinking maybe he's not quite ready to replace Godwin. Maybe he's still a little bit of a work, or a project at work. But I thought the same thing about Tyler Johnson. That maybe he may replace Godwin. Or that's one reason why the Bucks drafted him. And lastly, about Godwin, what a move. One of Arians' first moves when he got here. What a move to say, you know what? Godwin can be my slot receiver. All of a sudden, boom, he's a Pro Bowl receiver. That was just a little thumbnail about what a damn good coach Bruce Arians is and what this Bucks organization had lacked since Chucky was here.
Absolutely. Hey, Steve, one quick thing that jumped out at me about the boat parade and the remarks. And by the way,
No, Ira. No more stalling. It is time for the fans to hear from Vita Vea. About 17 minutes coming up here. A lot of good stuff, a lot of different takes from Vita on various subjects. And, of course, Vita's a guy that you may see at Bill Curry Ford. He's a customer. I've seen pictures of him up there at the dealership a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. While you listen, you can even go to BillCurryFord.com, start shopping, all the great deals. Look at the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. GM Sean Sullivan is all fired up to help Bucks fans. And here's Vita Vea. All right, Bucks fans, as promised, here is Super Bowl champion, third-year Buccaneers star, Vita Vea, joining the Ira Kaufman podcast. Vita, this has to be a dream come true kind of day for you, a couple days after the Super Bowl. How are you? How you feeling? And what's your energy like today?
Sure, I feel pretty good. This is a once-in-a-lifetime experience that, you know, we accomplished as a team. And it's just really crazy to think that we won the Super Bowl. When you really sit back and think about it, it's something growing up. My birthday always fell around the same time as the Super Bowl. So, you know, growing up, that's all you watch on around February, the Super Bowl. And growing up, I just used to always tell myself one day I'm going to play in the Super Bowl on my birthday. So it happens to be my birthday. It was 2 days before the Super Bowl. And, you know, played in it and we won.
Nice, nice. So it really was a dream for you as a kid. That's neat. Were you a big NFL fan as a kid? Did you have a favorite team or a favorite player and or a favorite Super Bowl?
I had a bunch of favorite players, and I think my favorite team growing up was, I don't think I had any choice because I was born and raised in California in the Bay Area, and all of my family were 49er fans, so I just grew into that, and now I'm just converting all of them to be a Buccaneer fan.
Sure. So you really had something in common with Tom Brady, who's from out there, and did you guys ever get a chance to talk about that a little bit? I know the players didn't get the same opportunity to mingle during the season as much as they normally would.
We ended up touching bases a little bit during the season. He asked me where I was from, and I told him, and we ended up narrowing it down, and we were like, oh, shoot, we stayed down the street from each other. We grew up basically 5 minutes away from each other, which was pretty cool to think about.
So the fans, they've been looking on YouTube, trying to find any evidence of the party that you guys had at the Florida Aquarium. I'm sure it was amazing. Ronald Jones did an interview. He said his big highlight from the party was Gronk dancing. What would you say about Gronk's dancing, and what was your big highlight from the event?
I was still a little exhausted at the party. My energy didn't start really kicking up towards the end of the party. I didn't really see Gronk dancing, but I heard the crowd going crazy when he got up on stage and, you know, started messing around. I think he got some moves on him.
Nice. Going back to the game, the Super Bowl itself, you had it was your second game back, and you played 31 snaps, and you had played more than 30 against the Packers. Bruce Arians, before the Packers game, he had said on a radio interview that your limit was going to be about 20 snaps. They were hoping to get 16 or 18, yet you went way beyond that. You know, a lot of fans were impressed, but I wanted to tell you this. Gronk did an interview at Disney World after the Super Bowl, and he was asked about just winning in the game and when he knew it was won. And he starts talking about Vita Vea and how impressed he was that you were just a beast and coming back from injury. And he just goes on this Vita Vea rant on Fox Sports when he was asked about something else. And it seemed like you got a lot of respect from your teammates, from how much work you put in and coming back. Did you feel that respect from them? And how much work really was it to get back on the field?
Yeah, I still felt part of the team, you know, along the way. Appreciate it. Shout out to Gronk for you know, talking about me. I call him Super Bowl Gronk now. He went off on Sunday. That man's a beast. Took a year off and came back and just balled out all season. He's probably the best tight end ever. But yeah, it was a struggle to come back, you know. Obviously having surgery and being in the cast for so long. By the time you get out of the cast, it's like you kind of got to learn how to walk again, learn how to run, you know, learn how to do all these things again that, you know, you thought were so simple. I think that was the biggest challenge for me, trying to fight through the pain of the injury and just taking it step by step and learning, you know, how to, like I said, learning how to first, you know, I didn't walk for like 6 weeks. And I was in a walking boot for 8 weeks. So it was definitely a struggle and a challenge for me, but it was well worth it, man.
Now that's awesome. Yeah, for fans to get a chance to hear that, you know, general managers, they always say when they're drafting players, they're looking for guys who love football, and it's so critical to have that love. Was that really your driving force all through the rehab to get back on the field in case the Bucs get to the Super Bowl, that you could actually be there? Was that really sort of driving every day of your rehab?
I didn't want to, you know, not try. But the biggest thing for me was just, you know, push for it, keep pushing for it, and keep trying to make it back, you know, rehab, work out, do all the little things, do all the right things to make it back. Because I told myself, if you didn't make it, at least you could tell yourself that, you know, you tried to make it back. So, you know, I didn't want to be sitting on the sideline watching the game when I knew I could have, you know, made it back and played. But to happen, you know, the training staff, weight room staff were, you know, helping me out. Also helped several teammates, you know, in the D-line room. They also helped me out along the way. You know,
nice.
Giving me advice and just, you know, just helping me out with the rehab situation and all that.
Now that the Super Bowl's over, Vita, can you sort of play it straight with fans? You never want another team to know, but now that the Super Bowl's over, what percentage are you, would you say? Are you like 80% back, 75% back? Do you have a lot of rehab left to go as this offseason kicks off?
No, I'm 100%. Obviously, you know, there could have been more. I could have had more strength, but, you know, obviously the such little time of working out. You know, obviously I've worked out my upper body, but to, you know, be able to do real leg workouts and real conditioning.
Sure.
That I couldn't really, you know, get being to the time frame that I had when I was cleared to play. But, you know, I'm happy with, you know, how I performed. You know, I'm happy that how we performed as a team. And I think everything just fell together and we just Super Bowl champs.
Oh, it's amazing what you pulled off in such a short amount of time. I think that's why Gronk was showing all that love, and you know, a lot of fans were amazed as well. Like I said, even Coach Arian said, well, maybe we can get him 20 snaps, and then and there you go with a lot more than that. On offense, you know, it kind of got lost in the game, but you came in for a few snaps, and I think a lot of fans were hoping they might throw you the ball again. That would have been awesome. They threw it to Joe Haig, and I think it's fair to say that you got better hands than Joe Haig does. But the offense coming in like that, was that planned in advance? Would you guys work on you being in goal line situation? And how much fun do you have when you get in there on offense?
I wouldn't say it's really much fun. I think it's more, I think I'm more nervous. But, you know, I'm more nervous during it just because I know I don't play offense like that. I'm more of a defensive guy, and it's just different, you know, when you're lined up across and you just know the mentality of a, you know, a defensive player. And when you're out there on offense, you're like, dang, I know everything what I'm
– sure.
I could – everything I have to do on defense, you know, I come on offense, you know, and it just – it's more – everything runs through your head more. Everything in your mind is scrambling. But I think after that first play on offense, I think I was fine and everything just fell into place for me.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to just get your first offensive snap of the year, really, or close to it in the Super Bowl. Like, it's got to be nerves. Vita, I was going to ask you about rushing off the edge. You know, I think a lot of fans get all fired up when they see you coming off the edge like you do a handful of times. And you did it in the Super Bowl successfully. Not everybody sees a 350-pound edge rusher with a lot of speed. Can you talk about how much you enjoy rushing off the edge as a change of pace, and if you think it's something that, you know, you can really get a lot better at?
It's definitely it's fun. It's fun, but there's different challenges across the board when you're lining up different positions across the D line. There's just different tempos and different speeds that you have to play at. You know, obviously I'm a nose guard, so when you play head up on the center and you play nose guard, everything happens so fast. And the further you move away from the ball, the slower it becomes. So when you're out there in a five technique, everything's much slower and it happens much slower than what I'm typically used to playing at nose. It was just, you know, something that you gotta be aware of while you're playing. And it was just, it's definitely fun playing out there. You know, growing up, everyone's like, if you're a defensive guy growing up, you're always watching, you know, outside rushers, watching them getting all the sacks. So it's definitely fun being out there.
Like I said, I think the fans have a lot of fun seeing you out there, but I know you're not going to replace JPP next season, but it's just fun to see you in some different looks and makes the team so much more versatile. Avita, your draft class, it's rare to have a draft class like you guys have had. Didn't start out that way, but here we are, a Super Bowl team, and you got yourself, Rojo, Carlton Davis, Alex Kappa, Jordan Whitehead, all starters. You know, I know you guys do a lot of bonding when you're drafted. You do a lot of community events and you get close. Can you talk about the draft class itself, maybe who you were most proud of among the guys and just the bond that you guys have?
I couldn't really pick one person, to be honest. You know, proud of all of these guys in my draft class. You know, I think we came a long way from our rookie year. Our rookie year, you know, we had a losing season, you know, a tough year. And, you know, continue to grow and build since then, I think was a tremendous accomplishment for us. And just seeing those guys grow and get better is amazing to watch. It's pretty cool, you know, how we all came in together and, you know, we're a part of this program that we're, you know, we're trying to change around and, you know, turn around and, you know, what we did Sunday. So that's pretty amazing for us.
Yeah, it really is. Five starters. It's like a general manager's dream. And, you know, you guys are all young and you'll be all back next year. It's just very exciting. How hard was it this season to just get through a year where you don't really go anywhere, where you just, you know, go to go home, go to the facility, go home? You know, you're not going out, you know, taking your girlfriend to the mall for the day or going to restaurants and things like that. How challenging was that on you? And maybe what did you fill the time with when you weren't doing other things?
I think it was definitely a challenge at the beginning when this all started. You know, we all came into camp, and I think that was really challenging for us, just being that, you know, it wasn't our norm and what we were used to. And I think it was just something that we got accustomed to early on, and, you know, we just got into a routine. You know, BAO told us that, you know, the most disciplined team is going to be the team that wins. You know, all 32 teams had to go through the same thing this year, you know, with testing and all the protocols that we had. You know, I think BAO was just hard on us, telling us that, you know, the most disciplined team in the NFL is going to be the team that wins, being that, you know, you got to follow the rules with all these different protocols and do all the right things so, you know, everyone stays healthy and, you know, doesn't miss a game or anything.
Do you think it made you more focused on football, or were you just kind of looking for different ways to just get away in your downtime at home with more movies, or did you find yourself watching more film? How did that kind of go?
I think you just find yourself having more downtime and just being, like you said, being able to, you know, study more, watch more film without a lot of distractions. So I think, you know, COVID definitely had its pros and cons.
I know you're good buddies, good friends. It is a great admiration between the two of you with Ndamukong Suh. And right after the Super Bowl, in sort of typical Suh fashion, he had all these interviews lined up for Monday morning. He was on CNN and CBS Good Morning shows and a lot of different shows. And one thing that he said, and it struck me that it really made an impression on him because he's such an established guy with business interests and all that. It really struck Suh, the speech that Tom Brady gave before the game, talking about honor. And it just said it really impacted him and it was just amazing. Can you talk about that speech and really what it meant to you, or if it made any difference to you and those on the D-line?
I think that speech was something that you had to be there to witness it. And it was just one thing, you know, when he spoke, everyone was quiet. And you could just tell that he's been there before. And, you know, what he said, that was all that needed to be said to us. And, you know, I think everybody on the team, everybody that was there in that moment, you know, really took it to heart.
Was it kind of like a 2-minute thing or like a 10-minute thing, or, you know, just to give the fans a little bit of an idea, because so many players have talked about it. Is it a long sort of speech, or what was it like?
No, it wasn't really long. I'd say it was about right at the minute mark, but maybe even less. He kept it short and sweet. But, you know, the main thing he talked about was honor, and, you know, how we'd be honored for the rest of our lives. And that, you know, nobody could take that away from us.
Now, last couple of questions for you, Vita, and we appreciate you taking the time before you head out to the boat parade. I had heard that you had a D-line dinner the other night, you know, sort of like a celebration dinner. Finally, you guys got to get together in a loose kind of fashion. From the D-line dinner, was there one favorite memory of the season that the group kind of talked about a lot? Maybe it wasn't the Super Bowl or a different game or a fun time with a coach, or is there one big memory for the D-line as a group that came up a lot?
I think during the dinner, the main thing was that we were all still in disbelief that we won the Super Bowl. I think that was just the craziest thing for us, you know, just sitting back and being able to, you know, sit at a restaurant and just relax. And, you know, we just played the whole season and accomplished what we wanted to accomplish.
Nice. And what's the offseason look like for you? Are you heading right out to vacation? Do you go back to California? What's the offseason look like for you?
I haven't really planned anything yet, but, you know, just relax for a week or two and then start working out again in Tampa.
Nice. Well, it sounds like you're fixed in the community here. I had heard you're getting married, and congratulations on that. You know, obviously, Bucks fans are expecting you to be here for another 8-10 years and bring home another couple of Super Bowls. So thanks so much, Vita, for taking the time. Don't celebrate too hard. Enjoy your offseason.
Appreciate you.
Ira, what did you think there when I brought up Tavita regarding his draft class, 2018 draft class? It's not really the one that a lot of people think about first top of mind, but five starters on a Super Bowl team from one draft class: Vita Vea, Ronald Jones, Carlton Davis, Alex Kappa, and Jordan Whitehead. You know, Bill Polian often says you want four. That's your ultimate goal, is four starters out of a draft. The Bucks got five. And these weren't exactly, names that were people were screaming about all over the country.
Well, you talk about a draft class. I mean, you know, we've picked on Jason Light relentlessly on this podcast for the 2016 draft class, which was basically a zero. Basically, you get an F, period. Move on. And now, 2 years later, you hit five bullseyes. I mean, fantastic. And anything that Bill Polian talks about in terms of a draft class, I'm listening. I'm listening, because one thing that always struck me about Polian, you know, I looked up his record with the Colts, and there was about 8 years in a row where the first draft pick for Indianapolis, and it wasn't, sometimes they didn't have a first round pick, but it was their first draft pick. And Lee, I'm not kidding. 8 years in a row, the guy drafted a stud. A stud. Wow. And, you know, one after another. I mean, it was a phenomenal run by Polian. So I'm listening to him when it comes to assessing the draft. That is a fantastic draft harvest. One of the all-timers in Buck history. Now, you know, you're going to be hard-pressed to match 95 when the first two guys you pick end up with Buston Canton. I mean, that sets the standard, Lee. That's the standard. You know, five starters off a Super Bowl team. Give the, you know, coaching staff their due for developing, you know, guys like Kappa and Whitehead, no question about it, Lee. But, you know, Vea, we didn't know about Vea. You know, you're taking a defensive tackle, you know, he's so-so on the pass rush. Well, Lee, I know how you feel. You feel that the resurrection of the Buck pass rush last two or three games is very directly tied to the return of Vita Vea. I'm not sure you're wrong, Lee.
I mean, let's take the Packers, for example, and that was his first game back. Corey Linsley's a Pro Bowl player. I think he's an All-Pro player, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he might have been the All-Pro center. He might have been.
They had just toyed with the guy like he was a child. It's blowing my mind. And there was no question that he was eating up blocks, because they didn't stop Vea. He was going to break Aaron Rodgers in half. And what happens when he starts eating up blocks, and Sue starts eating up blocks, all of a sudden JPP and Shaq get one-on-one. And we saw how that took place. You know, they got after Rodgers. They got after Pat Mahomes. I don't think there's any doubt about it. You know, the more I think about this, if we're going to point to one player, which is really irresponsible, but if we're going to pick one player that led the Bucks to a Super Bowl, I don't know. I wouldn't pick Vea, really.
He's a sneaky good player. he plays a role, and it's an important role. And other teams, you know, they have to game plan for the guy. And the pressure up the middle against Mahomes was very, very good, Steve, which helped the ends get to him, make him, you know, run 500 yards on the night, which is incredible. he's just a good football player, Steve.
Yeah, yeah, I can't put him in the MVP category like that just because he didn't play enough. Only because, like, even in the Super Bowl, he played, I think it was 30 or 31 snaps, 40%. But his impact was incredible in these last two games. And if he sparked the pass rush enough, then that's what put him over the top. It was really amazing to see. Like I said to him in the interview, I loved watching him rush off the edge, and he talked about that. And maybe we'll see more of that in the future. He's been a great draft pick. And what he did coming back like this, you know, it was an extraordinary test of his football desire, and he passed it with an A+. And, you know, it's exciting for the future. And thankfully, he said he doesn't have any more rehab. He's just getting stronger. That's it. You know, he's not rehabbing. It's just he needs more strength. And obviously, he'll get that in a matter of months. So great for Vea. And
one quick thing that jumped out at me about the boat parade and the remarks. And by the way, for anybody who says, you know, get some maturity, Buccaneers, you don't have to use four-letter words. And that's a lot of nonsense. I mean, they work so hard. They dealt with COVID. They work so hard. By the end of the year, they were the best team in football. They're allowed their day, Steve. They're allowed their day. They didn't hurt anybody. They enjoyed themselves. They gave a lot of entertainment to Buck fans. So let's not be prudish about this nonsense. They deserved to let it all hang out on Wednesday, and that's what they did. Steve, one of the things that jumped out at me, and Arians has said it on multiple occasions, and I love it because it's a big, big word that I've used in a negative sense about this franchise for a long time. That is, they are very physical, physicality. And Arians kept mentioning it, the trenches, we kicked their ass. And, you know, and he said the Chiefs were a finesse team, which they are. And I believe Green Bay falls in that mode. Green Bay's a finesse team. And I always think the offensive line, I'll tell you why, because even in 2019, the Bucs were very, very stout against the run defensively. So that speaks to physicality. I think the big difference was the offensive line. And I don't know how much credit I give Joe Gilbert, the entrance of Tristan Wirfs, who's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But Lee, for whatever reason, this Buck O-line matched the physicality of their brethren on the other side of the ball. And man, it's been a long time since I ever saw that from a Buck offensive line. So I love the fact that Arians kept talking about their physicality up front, because that's really been missing from this franchise.
Do you think overall, and I'm not just talking about the Bucs, and by the way, I love what you said. I love everything what you said. Does an offensive line set the tone for an entire team with physicality?
I don't think there's any question about it, Lee, and it's been sorely missing around here.
Yeah, it has. One point I want to expand upon, which I think what you mentioned is dead on, but is way overlooked. They beat the COVID, and Arians is, you know, boasting about that. You know, thank you. He's telling the players, thank you. You beat the COVID. Didn't these guys basically have to put themselves in their own little jail cells in order not to mingle with the public and expose themselves to a possible infection? Didn't these guys pretty much have to stay home? And it resulted in a Super Bowl, ultimately.
Yeah, we just heard Vita Vea dive into that.
And I think that's way overlooked. I mean, you saw teams, you know, Bucks never had a game that was delayed a day or two. That takes some personal discipline.
Excellent point, Lee. It shows a lot of mental toughness. We've been talking about physical toughness. And Steve, let's admit it. The Bucks handled the COVID situation, I think, as well as any franchise in this league. This year, and I give Arians a lot of credit, Steve, because I think he was the ringleader. I think he was relentless in pushing that message every week. And you know what helped, Steve? I think this is part of it. I think the players started to realize we got Tom Brady We can't screw this up. We have a chance. We have a chance. And I think that reinforced Arian's message, Steve, and as a result, the Bucks were absolutely circumspect in their personal conduct, and it's a tremendous credit to the organization.
It is, Ira. I personally can't go too overboard with the COVID stuff just because there's so much luck involved that I can't go too crazy. But they did obviously get the job done in that area, and that was an important part of the season. And just like any other part of football, injuries and certain things are luck, and I'm throwing COVID into that in some ways. So that's just me. What I wanted to put out there, though, with the offensive line, if anybody has any questions about the offensive line, the Bucs averaged and actually had, not just averaged, 30 points or more in every playoff game, four playoff games. You can't do that without an excellent offensive line. It's flat out impossible, and that should answer anybody's questions. And that, they ran the gauntlet 30-plus points on through the playoffs, so that's extraordinary. And with the Godwin front, you know, that's going to be the fun of this podcast going forward, is to try to figure out what the Bucks are doing, even though no one's going to tell us. You know, in we could actually, you could even make the case, well, if they let Godwin walk, they could just use that money, re-sign the rest of the team, draft a receiver at the end of the first round. The Bucks are obviously very adept at drafting receivers. That's the one area where they are best. And, everybody's happy. So, except for Godwin and his fans. There's so many ways to spin it and to look at it. Godwin is the guy looking for the biggest raise to go to 18, 19, 20 million. So that's the X factor. And well, we'll find out going forward. Like Lee said, his agent has been quiet. All right. One guy who is a big,
by the way, real quick, Steve, does that mean Godwin can buy a new phone?
As you mentioned, yes. It fell in the drink. Allegedly, Scotty Miller knocked it into the drink, and hopefully he had it backed up on the cloud. We can only hope for Chris Godwin's sake. Sage, anything you want to leave Bucks fans with? Your vaccine has got you excited. I know you're planning on going back to the clubs in March, a little dancing with your wife, all that stuff that you like to do. And, of course, we thank Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, for their presenting sponsorship of the podcast. Vita Vea is a proud Bill Curry Ford customer. I've seen him down there, so how about that? And Big Storm Beer, as always, they are the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Just because football season's over doesn't mean beer season is over, and that there's not fantastic food every single day at the Big Storm Tap Rooms in Odessa and in Clearwater, where we're going to be fired up for the draft party in the end of April. Sage will be vaccinated. That means he'll be hugging everybody. He'll be back to picking food off people's plates. He'll be schmoozing up there, saying, "What are you buying me?" It's going to be fantastic.
Steve, this is my send out to Buck fans, and I mean you, Javier, and Port Richie Lou, and whoever else you want to throw in the mix. And, you paid your dues. You paid your dues for 12 years. Season ended, December 30th or January 3rd. Your season was over. And now you got to watch TV and watch other teams frolic in the postseason. And your year's done. And all your attention turns to the draft because you got the fifth pick in the draft. And those days maybe are over. At least as long as Tom Brady is under center for the Bucks. So, I'm very happy for those diehard Buck fans, many of whom listen religiously to this podcast and read Joe Buck's Fan and are very aware of the hard work that you two guys put in to bring fresh content. I'm very, very happy for Buck Nation. Take a bow, ladies and gentlemen. You deserve it. You never got off the bandwagon. You deserve everything you got this year.